The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Monday, May 20th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Alongside me in the studio on every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and most Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, is Uncle T-Bone, your favorite uncle, joining us in the studio once again. Man, happy Monday. What a gorgeous day it is here in Auburn, Oklahoma. Like, it's been a rare sight as of late, but another Monday, and here we are once again.
Yeah, what's that fiery orange looking thing in the sky out there putting off heat? It's just been dreary and rainy and borderline chilly now for a couple of weeks. I'm glad to see the rain gone, finally taking away all the pollen. Get out of here. I think summer is right around the corner. Got a little toasty this weekend. It is a Chamber of Commerce Day here on the Plains, though. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. We've got a ton to discuss, Jacob. We've got finally Xander Schauffele has brought home a major, winning the PGA Championship in a wild golf week. It was and continues to be.
Yes.
Auburn takes care of business against Alabama, taking two out of three from the Tide. The season comes to a merciful end, but winning back-to-back series on their way out, so the Tigers are finished, but gave the hometown crowd a lot to cheer about this weekend, taking care of business against their friends from across the state in Tuscaloosa. We're still searching for a point guard transfer here on the Plains in the basketball program. I'm going to have a little football news, unfortunately, to share with everybody. So, like I said, give us a call, 334-321-1390 here at On the Line, Jacob, the show that tells it like it is.
And holds nothing back, which we fully plan on doing once again today. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join us coming up in hour number two. We will sort of put a bow on most spring sports for Auburn. Not all, but most. Baseball and softball, both of their seasons coming to an end. And we'll talk a little basketball, maybe some football things with Jacob Hillman. So that'll be coming up in hour number two at 3:30. But as Uncle T-Bone said, phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. And let's start with the PGA Championship for our golf people out there. And even if you're not a golf fan, after Friday morning, you at least watched something about golf on Friday and this weekend. I know that you did, because it was a crazy week in Louisville for the PGA Championship, the second major of the year, second of four of the major big golf tournaments in the calendar year. And it was going fine. Everything was cool. Thursday happened, opening round, right? You knew there was some weather in the forecast. Okay, that's fine. And then Friday morning happens, where at 5:30 local time, the number one golfer in the world, Scottie Scheffler, was arrested outside of Valhalla Golf Club, and everything, it hit the fan, and you know what I'm talking about. It just went insane, and the world was going wild because nobody could figure out just exactly what had happened. And you know the story by this point. We talked a lot about it on Friday here on this show, where Scottie gets arrested, he gets bailed out, or I guess released, got picked up by the owner of the golf course, drove him back, and in a 45-minute time, rolled into the clubhouse, put on some clothes, ate some eggs, hit some balls on the range, and all he did was go out and shoot 5 under par on a Friday afternoon. Well, he did not end up winning the tournament, which would have been the biggest storyline in the history of sports. It was a rough Saturday for him. His caddy was not with him on Saturday. Most people did not know that. His normal caddy was not with him. But he had a good Sunday, and he had another good finish. But, man, this was a stacked tournament, Uncle T-Bone, and the PGA Championship delivered once again.
It sure did. Before we get into the Scheffler stuff, which I still don't think that hardly anybody knows exactly what happened in his arrest, the police can't really verify a whole lot of it because the arresting officer didn't have his body cam, video camera going during the entire episode.
That's convenient.
So it's going to end up being a lot of he said versus he said with a few witnesses sprinkled in there on whatever type of sandwich that's going to turn out to be. And I've got a feeling that one's going to end up ending bad for the city of Louisville. We'll have some thoughts on that in a little bit. But the tournament itself, Xander Schauffele, like I said, making me eat some words because I was one of those guys that said he was just the guy that was always going to be just good enough but not good enough to win a major, was really that guy that's out there, unfortunately, that the PGA Tour media and the TV media always kind of build up as the best player who's never won a major, you know, how they did Ricky Fowler for a lot of years. It's very unfair, but Schauffele proves the doubters and the haters and the Uncle T-Bones of the world wrong, holding on to shoot a record 21 under for any major, the lowest I believe the lowest scoring finish for any major winner in the history of golf. So, man, he played some good golf, but it was shaky too. I watched a ton of that tournament this weekend. I felt like on Saturday I texted you just one quote that said Xandered because on 12, I believe it was, it may have been 13, he's leading the tournament and, you know, has like an 8-iron in, which is just a standard shot for a professional golfer, and hits one of the worst 8-irons I've seen in recent professional golf history. Misses the green by a good 20, 30 yards. Just a dead pull yank. It was an awful swing. And ends up making a double bogey there and letting the rest of the field kind of catch him when he was beginning to pull away again. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of that from there on out. He would get up front, come back. Get up front, come back. And then this time he goes on Sunday, makes a big-time error on 10, the easiest playing hole in the tournament, a par 5, and makes a bogey there. And you're sitting there thinking, it's over.
Here we go.
The field's going to catch him, and somebody's going to pull away late like in a NASCAR race and take it right there at the checkered flag, baby. And he comes back on the par 3, 11, and hits one to about 3-4 feet and makes a gritty putt that just slips in. And that finally, I think, settled him down once and for all and allowed him to take care of business.
Yeah, and he played really well on Sunday, shooting a 65 on a par 71 course. I mean, just really played a good round of golf with all of the biggest names in the sport behind him on the leaderboard, but ahead of him on the golf course. I mean, Bryson DeChambeau came out of nowhere, shot 20 under par, was just one off of the lead. If he had played a little bit better in round one, I mean, and still shot a 68. I mean, still shot 3 under day one, 65 day two, 67 day three, shot a 64 yesterday.
I mean, how much better can you play in a major championship?
Yeah.
Outside of him just missing a few short putts, that had they gone in, I mean, that's the difference between he being the champion and Xander still being talked about as the guy who's never going to get over the hump with a major.
Yeah, a bogey-free 7-under round for Bryson DeChambeau, who had that golf course buzzing yesterday. That place was going crazy for him. Yeah. And I'll say this, okay? I'm not a Bryson DeChambeau fan. I never have been. I've pretty much been a hater of Bryson DeChambeau. I've never really liked his personality. I never liked his antics. I never liked the things he said. I was just... You just have those golfers, right? It's like NASCAR, like you said. There's so many different people competing. You have your ones that you like. You have the ones that you're cool with and that you're all right with winning. And then you have the guys where you just don't really want to see it happen for them. And Bryson was one of those guys for a long time for me. But he has grown up a lot, Uncle T-Bone. He's grown up a ton, and he's gotten a lot of backlash for the LIV stuff and going to play on the LIV tour and taking all the money and throwing away the PGA, all that type of stuff. But he's grown up a lot, and I found myself cheering for Bryson DeChambeau yesterday for the first time maybe ever. And He was very classy. He lost the tournament and went from the range where he was warming up in case Xander Schauffele couldn't pull away and would have to force a playoff. He walked from the range, came and found Xander Schauffele and congratulated him on his win. That's big time stuff. He could have easily walked away and gone home and never said a word or sent him a text or whatever. So Bryson DeChambeau had a great round yesterday. And so many others, man. How about Victor Hovland? You had Justin Rose. Scottie Scheffler even played really well. He shot 65 yesterday after a 2-over 73 the day before.
Three storylines in this major that I think will carry for a very, very long time. Of course, numero uno, Scottie Scheffler and that whole incident. We're going to get to that here shortly. I mean, people are going to be talking about this forever. Thank you, radio gods. Secondly, the people that Schauffele held off it's one of the better leaderboards I've seen in a long time.
Oh, it was awesome. It was great.
And third, these professionals dominated this course this week.
Mm-hmm.
And when that rain came in and softened up everything, especially those greens, they were fearless pin seeking. And there were no repercussions. There was nothing the grounds crew, there was nothing the PGA could do to make that course any harder than they did. And when you got guys like Bryson DeChambeau hitting rocket bomb 360-yard drives right down the pipe and have some type of flip wedge into long par fours, I mean, Jacob, they were hitting off the tee box on some par threes, 200 yards, 8 irons.
Yeah.
I mean, this length that these professionals have with this equipment and all the nutrition and the working out, this not the Craig Stadlers of the world anymore, if you know what I mean. These aren't the walrus, right? These guys are ripped.
Yeah.
They're hitting mega bombs.
The technology nowadays is unbelievable.
Yeah, and you know, when a course gets damp like that and the greens are soft, they're going to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to kill it. In contrast, wait till this summer if the situation is like it normally is for the U.S. Open, where there's zero rain wherever they play, and they dry that bad boy out, and they speed those greens up, and they push them way back, and you'll see these scores come down. But 21 under to win a major. I would have never thought that in my life growing up.
Yeah, and, you know, there's some of the golf world, golf fans that hate to see that, right? They're not a fan of super low scores in majors. I kind of sit
purist.
In between. Yeah, it is. It's the purest. And, look, you got to earn it. But if somebody shoots 21 under par, like Xander Schauffele, who not only shot 21 under par, was tied going to 18, and
right.
He birdied the last hole, the 72nd hole of a major, to win it all. Like, you can't say anything about that. There's nothing you can say that can take that away from him, because you look at the other majors, the Masters, the U.S. Open, and the Open, that's always played overseas and the biggest wind and rain you're ever going to see. Yeah, that's when you see 5 and 6 under par to win a tournament. Who cares if one of them goes 21 under par to break a record? Good for Xander Schauffele.
Yeah, it's just a different world, and it's an example of how all sports are changing in some form or fashion. And if you want to enjoy it, you just got to let it roll off your back. If you're a purist and you want to see them hitting Persimmon Woods 225 out there with old Tour Edition golf balls, you still got to make the putts. Here's a quote from Xander about that. I was actually kind of emotional after the putt lipped in. This was the one on 11 yesterday. It's been a while since I've won, and I really just keep saying all week, I just need to stay in my lane. He was just talking about, I've got to knock back putts. And when everybody and all the professionals are all right there, whether they're shooting 2 under to win a tournament overall or 21 under, it's exciting, and you still got to figure out a way to get the ball in the hole, no matter how much easier the greens are than they normally are.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Here's something that I wanted to look at here really quickly, and I'm going to sound like an old, you know, crazy man to get off my lawn. But have you seen the amount of money that everybody earned from this tournament? I mean, the purses now are insane. $18.5 million was shelled out to the players this week at the PGA Championship. Xander Schauffele brought home $3.3 million for winning. Okay, that's pretty awesome. You win, you got $3 million. Congratulations. Bryson DeChambeau made almost $2 million, Uncle T-Bone, to not win a golf tournament. He came in second in a major. That's a big deal. But $2 million to lose, to not win, that's a lot of money, my friend. That's a lot of money for people that didn't win the tournament. And it's higher than we've ever seen. And there's one reason and one reason only. It's because of LIV. The PGA Tour had to do something to compete, and they started raising the stakes. But, man, that's a lot of money to throw around.
Yeah, I mean, every major in any sport's obviously going to be more valuable than your regular tournament, than your regular, like, John Deere Classic in Iowa, right? I mean, this PGA Championship, out of all the majors in golf, you know, it's probably the fourth most prestigious. But it's still going to always garner a massive payout. But, yeah, you can just think the Saudi Arabian and Aramco and Royal Oil money over there for buying up the LIV Tour. And they're going to continue to try and buy up other sports. And, you know, if you're the PGA and you're not willing to be a little bit more flexible with your stringent rules in the past, and you're going to be a little, you know, come across as stingy for your payouts, then players are going to, you know, continue to leave in mass.
Yeah, and Ben Taylor just texted me, reminding me that it is an elevated event, right? It's one of those where, like, it's a major. Like, it's one of the biggest ones in the world and of the year. I get that. It's just, it's just crazy to see how it's grown. I mean, it's Scottie Scheffler finishing top 10 made $500,000. I mean, that's a lot of money for these guys.
You mean the Louisville Police Department just made $500,000?
Well, he made back whatever he's going to have to pay them to get out of it, I guess. I don't know. Or pay his lawyer there in Louisville. And that's a developing story, too, which we could talk about as we go on. We'd love to hear from you on this Monday afternoon, 334-321-1390. More of the Scottie Scheffler news. We do have some Auburn football things we need to talk about. And then we're going to get to some Auburn basketball transfer portal updates as well. That's all coming up here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Let's get to the phone lines here on the Monday edition of On the Line, 334-321-1390. John in Auburn, what's up, man? Happy Monday.
Hey, happy Monday, guys. Hey, I got to tell you, I was as impressed with Scottie Scheffler this weekend as I was maybe any athlete going back 10, 20 years in any sport.
It was remarkable,
To me, the arrest thing, but personal opinion here, I'm not sure the arrest was that warranted. And to me, I feel like our society has a lot of people who grab on to perceived victimhood and run with it. It would have been so easy for Scheffler in that moment to come out with a news conference, I want to boycott X, I want to boycott Y. And he would have had a lot of allies in the media had he done that. And he didn't do it. And I was really impressed with how he handled that situation.
Well, I mean, for us not knowing Scottie Scheffler other than what he allows us to know, right? His media presence and his presence on and off the course and things like that. I mean, that is pretty much in line with what we know about Scottie Scheffler. He's just cool, calm, collected. And look, he shows up, he plays golf, and he goes home to his wife and his newborn kid and goes to church and does those things and just lives his life. And so, yeah, when this thing happened, I mean, he released a statement. He was very humble about it, said it was a miscommunication and a misunderstanding. And, yeah, showed up and did his job on a Friday and shot a 5-under par in a major championship.
Was really impressive, really impressive. Hey, if I may make a turn real quick to NIL.
Go for it.
Something I was thinking about over the weekend is if you look back at the history of the NCAA, one thing the NCAA has not allowed, I'm not sure, maybe it goes 50, 60 years back, they do not allow student athletes to have jobs during the season that they play a sport. So if you're a football player, you can't have a job in the fall. You can have one in the spring. So for a lot of the non-revenue generating sports, you know, whether it's golf or tennis, a lot of those spring sports, it was hard historically for those guys or women to hold down jobs. So when you think about it in NIL now, we have this huge influx of money you know, millions of dollars per student athlete. And what do they do in the off season? It's hard for them to, I mean, who wants to take a $10 an hour job when you've got $2 million in the bank? And so just thinking about all that with the situation that happened with Brian Battee this weekend, I know there's a lot of blaming going around. Oh, it's the middle of the night when this happened. I don't really see that as being an issue. I think the NCAA is really hosing over some kids by not allowing them to be productive now with NIL.
It's an interesting point. And you know, those are the conversations that are still to be had. And unfortunately, the conversations that were not had by the NCAA and the people that are in those offices before all of this became a thing, it's the difficult questions and the one-off situations and those what-ifs that we like to have on this show quite a bit because of people like you that bring that stuff up like this, John, and those people didn't have those conversations. And so then, yeah, you start running into situations and it's like, oh, we didn't think about that. Now what do we do? And that seems to happen just about every day, but that's also going to happen when something new is introduced like NIL was.
It is, and when these student-athletes have 10, 12-hour days in-season, off-season, if any of us had, I mean, I'll speak for myself, if I had $2, $3 million in the bank coming in every year when I'm not in school, absolutely I'd be out all hours of the night. I don't know what 19, 20, 21-year-old would not in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think money or no money, and we appreciate the call, John. You can get into it 334-321-1390. Young people are going to stay out all night if they can.
Yeah.
I mean, not all young people, obviously, but, you know, I can remember being out till the crack of dawn, leaving the old War Eagle Supper Club back in the day and not really knowing what day it was when I was 20, 21 years old. So, I mean, it's an unfortunate situation, and he's referring to Auburn running back Brian Battee, who quite frankly is fighting for his life right now, by all accounts, from what I can understand, being caught up in a shooting this past Saturday night down in Sarasota, Florida, where his brother was murdered. And he took, unfortunately, a hit into the head and has been in intensive care ever since. And the reports on his condition and what's actually happened down there and what's going to happen are spotty at best.
Yeah, this is a tough thing to talk about, especially when it's one of our own talking about an Auburn athlete, but just talking about any athlete, any person. I mean, right. Brian Battee, as you said, was down in Sarasota this weekend with his brother, and they were out late and caught up in some sort of situation. And that's what's weird about all of this is there's just not a whole lot of information right now. So it is tough to talk about it because we just don't know really what happened. But what we do know is, yeah, his brother was killed in a shooting. And Brian Battee took a bullet to the head and is still in the hospital. Hugh Freeze actually tweeted out something earlier this afternoon, late morning, early afternoon, that asked Auburn fans to continue to pray and keep him in your prayers, talking about Brian Battee, and I'll pull up the tweet and read it to you. Hugh Freeze says, Auburn family, please continue to pray for Brian Battee. There was a setback last night, and he's still on a ventilator. Hashtag AU strong. He's in the ICU, still on a ventilator. I mean, it's safe to say, you said it, Brian Battee's fighting for his life right now. And that's just so scary, man. I don't care who you are, what you were doing, where you were at, who you were with. I mean, that's something that shouldn't happen to anybody.
I mean, I've been out at 3:30 in the morning several times in my lifetime when I was a younger man, and never once was I worried about where I was getting caught up in some type of shooting. And it just seems to be something that's in my lifetime happened more and more over time. I think that there's just a large segment of this society, unfortunately, that's forgotten how precious life is, and this is another example of the situation. I mean, look, Jacob, a couple of weeks ago, unfortunately, there was an Auburn High football player who was set to graduate that was murdered in Union Springs, caught in a shooting down there late at night. You know, this thing happened a couple of years up in Dadeville, Alabama, where there was a mass shooting casualty event at a party. When did people start turning to guns over the last 30, 40 years as the go-to in any type of, altercation or disagreement? But if you have not heard, according to multiple media outlets, Auburn running back Brian Battee was one of many victims in a shooting according to Sarasota County Sheriff's Office. This happened in Sarasota on the 3400 block of 17th Street at approximately 3:30 on Saturday night into Sunday morning. So it's a terrible event, and we'll keep you posted as details come in.
30 minutes in to hour number one. We'll flip gears, talk a little Auburn basketball, transfer portal recruiting when we come back here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7. And as we do switch gears, we'll talk a little something different here. Auburn basketball got some news to get to, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on all this. 334-321-1390. Auburn added, over the last couple of days, they added a transfer portal player. Uncle T-Bone, they added somebody. Somebody didn't go somewhere else. They chose Auburn. Can you believe it? It's pretty wild. Jaheim Hudson chooses Auburn, the SMU transfer forward. He has decided to come and play for Auburn, and so the Tigers seem to be looking for that one final piece, but Jaheim Hudson, he fills that what could be backup forward spot for the three, but most likely the four behind Chaney Johnson.
Yeah, Jaheim Hudson, 6'7", 230 pounds, started his college career at Georgia State, where he played 2 years, averaged 10 points a game, 6.8 rebounds up at Georgia State as a sophomore in Atlanta. Then he went out to SMU. And last season averaged 5.4 points a game, 3 rebounds a game roughly, 1 assist a game. A little bit, I don't want to say disappointing. But there were three bigs that I can think of off the top of my head that Auburn missed on to get to Mr. Howard. The Godfrey kid from Clemson who went to Georgia. Acor, who ended up at Kansas State now. Somehow he was able to get into Kansas State from Samford, but he couldn't get into Auburn, right? And then Dylan Mitchell, who was the former five-star that was at Texas, he's going to Cincinnati.
Bearcats,
to
baby.
Be a Bearcat. And look, that's a good basketball program overall over the years. But right now, I can't see Cincinnati be even close to the type of basketball program Auburn is, which says a heck of a lot for what Bruce Pearl's done to this program. Thank you, Coach. But he decided, nah, I'm going to go to Cincinnati instead. And Auburn immediately finally had a backup plan ready to go. And Jaheim Howard, Jaheim Hudson. And look, I trust Bruce Pearl, and this sounds like the type kid that. I didn't know a whole lot about Chaney Johnson when he came into the program last year, but I do now. I didn't know a lot about CBM when he came into the program last year, but I mean, we all trust that those two guys are going to be wonderful contributors to Auburn next season. So I am glad that Auburn got this commit. They're still searching for a point guard. It doesn't baffle me at this point. There's some comments from Bruce Pearl today that explains that it's just a new world and it takes a little bit longer sometimes to get what you need or get the right person in here. But he did say that, you know, summer workouts, start after Memorial Day. And this is what I've been preaching for a while. Get your team, get the continuity in now. And when summer workouts begin, have your full roster so you're not dropping somebody in later in the summer and it causes any kind of disruption.
Yeah, Bruce Pearl spoke earlier today before his For the Children golf fundraiser. He said, I think that's the last piece. One more impactful guard. So talking about that point guard spot, says we really need one more guy that has a chance to compete. It really doesn't matter for me which position it's going to be, whether it's a 1-2, 2-1, 2-3, 3-2. Talk about the different positions that they could play. He says, but it'll be one more guard. We've tried to really be patient and get the right fit. We were involved with a couple of really good ones. I can't believe we're in the middle of May and we're not done recruiting. But that's what the combination of NIL and the transfer portal has done. And, you know, and that's the end of the quote. Your reaction is sort of what I saw over the weekend from Auburn fans in terms of Jaheim Hudson when he committed. It was, that's kind of how people took it. It was just kind of like underwhelming, just not over the top excited because of what has happened in the last, 4 to 5 weeks for Auburn in recruiting in terms of the transfer portal, where they've had those big name guys. They've had the guys that have visited campus and loved it here at Auburn and then decided to go somewhere else. And Jaheim Hudson's a great player. He's from SMU. He's going to be your backup forward, and I think could come in and have a chance to start if he does all the right things. I don't think he will, but I think he could, and I think he embraces that role. And I love Chaney Johnson, but I may have said this on Friday, but I don't think he's just the best four that's ever existed. Like, he has a chance to be replaced if you were to have brought in somebody that could do that.
I think that if Dylan Mitchell from Texas would have come in, he'd have been your starter.
I think Acor, again, however you pronounce it, I think he would have had a chance to come in and take that starting spot too.
I mean, it's going to be some effort to take it away from Chaney Johnson if he is indeed your four going in, if they don't move Broom around, which they can do. And I think you're going to see multiple lineup, all through the season until – I'm not quite certain you're going to get into that rotation as much as you did last year. I think a lot of that was to kind of keep both the point guards doing what they do. And it's not like Tahad Pettiford couldn't play point guard or Denver Jones couldn't play point guard. And you'll see them play point guard at times this year. Both of those are more shooting guards. I mean, Pearl said it himself. Pettiford is we don't really want him to play point because he shoots so well.
Yeah, he's such a good scorer.
And then you're going to put on a freshman who's allegedly a really good shooter, all the pressure of being the starter point guard or a point guard. I wonder where I've seen that before, Aiden Holloway in last year, and it just didn't work out. They weren't, man enough to handle it at that time.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to put it if you're Bruce, because he came out months ago. You remember when he came out and said very clearly, Tahad Pettiford is not our point guard. He is going to play the two. He's going to play as a shooting guard. And you get a little bit more of an explanation from Bruce Pearl today. It's because he's such a good scorer and such a good shooter. And look, that's fine. I'm fine with that. And he's going to play behind Denver Jones. He's going to come in and he's going to just play his game. He's not going to have all that pressure. And there's going to be times, as we saw at the end of last year, where Denver Jones can move up and play the one, and then you could bring Tahad Pettiford in and play the two. You could play them together at the same time when J.P. Pegues is sitting on the bench. Like, you're going to have those options, and you're going to see that from Auburn. You'll see that in non-conference play. That's where you'll see a lot of that once they try to figure out, okay, what is our go-to rotation? Who do we want at what times? And it could, Uncle T-Bone, it could change depending on the opponent that you play in SEC play.
And it should change. I mean, that's what, matchups is part of successful coaching, right? You want to create the most advantageous matchups you can against your opposition.
Especially when you have the guys to do it.
And that's why you need a full lineup of a roster to do it, so you can have options. J.P. Pegues was Auburn's top transfer target at point guard. They went out there and got their man. He is one of only 9 players in college basketball last year at Furman to average at least 18 points, 4.5 assists per game. Auburn saw him apparently last year in some type of exhibition game. Bruce Pearl had his eye on him then. And Pearl has nothing but great things to say about this kid. And let's not make this mistake by saying that we're looking for another point guard because Pettiford and Denver Jones are just your shooting guards. You said it. They can both play point when need be and will. But we're kind of pigeonholing into Pegues into him not being a scorer and a shooter as well because he's a point guard. He is.
Yes.
You can just turn him loose. I'm not going to say he's going to go out there and be Jared Harper in his last season at Auburn, but he gives you a more consistent knockback shot when you need it from your point guard that Auburn has been lacking for the last couple of years, I think. That Trey Donaldson, in my opinion, was beginning to become more confident with. I don't think Aiden Holloway really ever found a shot at Auburn.
Well, and you bring up a good point. Auburn went after J.P. Pegues, and he was their go-to guy. Like he was what Auburn wanted. They wanted a point guard, and they wanted him. And they went, and they got him. And now you're just trying to bring in some depth. You're not going to get somebody to compete with J.P. Pegues because, let's just be real, at this point in the game on May 20th, you're not going to find anybody that can do that. And you're not trying to because that's why you brought him in. He is your guy, and he's going to be a really experienced, really talented point guard at this level in the SEC, which now gives you, what, a projected starting five of J.P. Pegues, Denver Jones, Chad Bickermazara, Chaney Johnson, and Jani Broome.
Solid lineup.
That's your starting five right now for Auburn, which would then give you a transfer point guard as the backup, whoever that becomes. You have then Tahad Pettiford at the two. You have now you've got the Hudson kid as a backup forward, mm-hmm. and you still have Dylan Cardwell as a five out
and
there,
Ja'Kai
too.
And Ja'Kai Howard coming in, too, who can play
correct
three or two, depending on what you need.
So there's your backup three if you need it.
So I think that leads back to one road that's still a possibility for point guard. Because you're saying you don't have to have a guy come in at point guard now, as long as Pegues is healthy, that you know is going to be a solid point guard for you. He's proven it. He's solid. That's our starter. You would prefer to have someone who's extremely talented and has, in my opinion, a couple of years to play. Someone who's willing to take a shot at being a backup to get their foot back in the door with a major basketball program. And I'm talking about Dior Johnson here. You know, what's the story with him, Jacob? What's the latest with him? Last I saw, he was on the verge of a visit to Auburn. I don't know if that ever occurred. You know, I kind of got out of sorts at the end of last week with work and the PGA Championship and got kind of caught up in everything and missed if there's any news on him. Because that kid, despite the baggage, which is the real question mark here, can flat out ball.
Yeah, he can.
And he's got a couple of years left of eligibility.
He can play. And yeah, the latest updates that we had talked about on the show were when he sat down with JUCOrecruiting.com and had really talked about all of his past and addressed it and understood that it was not obviously not good, but the fact that he understood it and that he was trying to overcome it, really. And he did meet with Auburn. He had a Zoom call with Auburn, if you remember. He sat down and talked with them. And I don't know. Auburn received a lot of flack for that because of, again, the risk that you would mm-hmm. be taking to bring a guy in like that, which is absolutely the case. Like, that mm-hmm. nothing against him. I obviously don't know him, but
super high risk, super high reward, though, if it
sure.
works out. And I'm with you. All I know about him is what I've read about. Online about his issues and the crimes that he were accused of, some of which were dropped down. A lot of that was, Oregon, University of Oregon was looking to pick him up. You know, it was good enough for them. He decided to look elsewhere as a transfer after one of their starters at guard and their room was pretty filled up, decided to come back. So I'm with you. You know, in my opinion, though, I don't think that there could be a better person for him to fall under in college basketball than Bruce Pearl, though. Because I don't care what anybody ever says about Bruce Pearl. You know that man cares about his players just about as much as anything.
Mm-hmm.
And even after the debacle that the loss was to Yale in the NCAA tournament, for days afterwards, and there were reports that Aiden Holloway just went MIA. He was leaving the program, you know, and might have been up in contact with Alabama at that point or even before to get over there to Tuscaloosa.
Hey-o.
Not just Bruce Pearl, Stephen Pearl, and many other people associated with that program at Auburn University were defending him out in public. And he had an awful game against Yale and was catching you-know-what and should have for playing so poorly in that game. And they defended him until the bitter end. And that's probably one of the reasons why it ticks Auburn fans so bad off that he not just went to Alabama, but his parting shots afterwards, when you've got a guy like Bruce Pearl laying the road for his players.
And that's something that everybody knows, is that Bruce is a very loyal coach to his guys, sometimes to a fault. And
if you're going to have some faults, being loyal to a fault would be one that I'd like to have.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm absolutely with you on that.
But you know, I don't have many faults, Jacob, so no, I wouldn't really know.
Yeah, I've heard you're pretty perfect is what they say outside the studio.
What most people think.
I forgot about Chris Moore, that he's going to be coming back for his fifth year. So you do have that as a backup forward option
as
well.
Solid role player with ton of experience, veteran leadership, great in the locker room. Everybody likes him and can play some lockdown defense, especially when he's healthy.
So overall, I mean, Auburn's roster is solid and still looking for that final guard. But you now know what your starters are going to be. And you also know kind of what your bench is going to be. Now, the question is, who is that point guard? And then how does that all fit together? How does that rotation work out? How does it all stack up for what you're trying to achieve coming up in 24 and 25? Because this is a big year for Auburn.
Oh, it's huge, Jacob. I mean, there's going to be a tremendous amount of media and a tremendous amount of expectation heading into this season. I mean, this roster is so solid right now that according to CBSSports.com preseason, Auburn's ranked 10th. Okay? When you're ranked,
which is what we predicted.
And that's what we want. That's what you want in every program. You want to be in that top 10 and considered a championship contender. So buckle up, Auburn fans. You got what you wish for. Bruce Pearl, the expectation is high, but the reward can be even higher. And I'm ready to go ahead and see, whether it's D'Or Johnson or not, this last piece of the puzzle, get in here, and those guys get to work. Because I'm going to tell you another thing about D'Or Johnson that I just thought of. It's not just Bruce Pearl and that staff, but he's walking into a really good situation with this roster. Look at how mature this team is. You know, and despite the fact that CBM has had some issues on the court, everyone loves him off the court. But look at the senior leadership. Chris Moore just made me remember that. I mean, and you got players like Pegues coming in who are so solid. Denver Jones has been around. Janai Broome's been around. Dylan Cardwell. I mean, good grief. Who wouldn't want that kid on their roster?
How about eight seniors? How about that?
How's that taste?
Seven seniors and a grad student in Dylan Cardwell.
Walking into a fantastic locker room with coaches who think the world of their players and do everything they can, bend over backwards to take care of them and mentor them. If he's going to go somewhere in college, this would be a good place for him to go.
From the media to radio personalities to the fans, there's one word that really is going to sum up and kind of be labeled as what this 24-25 season is going to be. It's pressure. Pressure is what is on this season. And it has to happen because this is a big-time year. Disappointment cannot be a factor and cannot settle in once again on Auburn basketball fans because I just don't know if they'll handle it anymore.
Quick question. I know we're late for a break. But isn't that why you go out and have strong point guard play?
Sure.
For the pressure.
For the pressure.
And Auburn's point guard play just really didn't live up to that pressure at the end of last season.
Let's take our final break here in hour number one, 334-321-1390. We'll wrap it up on the other side.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
All right, wrap it up. Hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line. And we didn't get to this because we had so much other things to talk about, Uncle T-Bone, and I don't think we'll have time to get to it in hour two. But let's do a really quick best and worst from the weekend in sports. Anything on your mind that best and worst that you saw across the sporting world this weekend? I've got one. How about last night? I don't know if this is a good or bad thing. I'm not a NASCAR fan.
Yeah.
Did you see the brawl that broke out last night?
No, I haven't seen that yet. I haven't had a chance to look at it, but I heard that there was a nice little fight in the in the pits after the race. So, yeah, that's pretty bad. But, you know, they've kind of had these almost like little fake fights building up to a good fight for a while in NASCAR with this new breed of racer. You know, it's not like the old Cale Yarborough days where they just went at it whenever.
And, yeah.
I mean, some of those old dudes would kick somebody's butt. They grew up fighting.
Well, this was not a pretty fight.
Yeah.
It was bad.
Like I said, they've had a couple of these little dust ups, and finally somebody just let somebody have it. And, Yes, I don't know. That might be best for me.
It's, I like
know,
it.
Make it a little bit grittier.
I like
and,
it.
And, you know, Scottie Scheffler being arrested is pretty bad. I don't know if that counts for the weekend, but
oh, sure.
Goodness gracious. And I had Xander Schauffele as my worst for the weekend before when he completely melted down and allowed Rory McIlroy to walk away with the PGA event leading up into the PGA Championship. So I'm going to have him as my best now for holding on and taking care of business and getting over the hump. And you know these majors kind of come in spurts, so look for him to go ahead and rack up another one pretty quickly while he's hot.
I'll say this too, another best from the weekend, yesterday, Sunday afternoon, and into Sunday night. How about two game sevens in the NBA playoffs? Can't beat that. Two more game sevens. You had a game seven in the East between the Pacers and the Knicks. Pacers upsetting the Knicks in New York, in Madison Square Garden. The Knicks go in, or the Pacers go in and take down the Knicks 130-109. They shoot over 70% in the first half, over 60% from the game. They broke a record in the last like 25 years for shooting percentage. That Pacers team was hot yesterday. They're moving on to take on, that's right, my Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. And Anthony Edwards and the Minnesota Timberwolves take down the defending champs 98-90 on their home floor to take game seven.
Yeah, how about the Nuggets going down? Woo! That is from the penthouse to the outhouse. And the young Timberwolves taking care of business and will move on. So that's a team to look out for.
Yeah, two home teams lose in Game 7, and now you're in the conference finals across the NBA. So keep up with that as well. Hour number one is in the books. We've got some Auburn football things in terms of preseason rankings. We'll talk about that coming up in hour number two.
An Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two here on the Monday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Uncle T-Bone with you in the studio. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch up with the podcast. You can find it numerous ways now. ESPNAU.com. That's our station website. You can find it there. You can also just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast, or you can download our new Radio Alabama app and you can get it on there as well. Hour number one, we talked about the PGA Championship from over the weekend, and Xander Schauffele overcame all of the criticism, all of the doubters, even some of those in this studio, and also was able to win the PGA Championship. Gave some updates on some sad news for Auburn football as of right now, and keeping you updated on the Brian Battee situation as we get more information. And talk to Auburn basketball in the transfer portal as they pick up one and looking for another commit. So that was all back in hour number one. Here in hour number two, going to talk a little Auburn football in terms of some power rankings, top 25s that ESPN released post-spring. And then coming up in just about 30 minutes or so, we'll talk to Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. Until then, phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. And Uncle T-Bone, before we get to these rankings, I want to say the countdown is officially on for college football. And until Auburn football kicks off, we are 103 days away from the start of Auburn football. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? 103 days from the start from Auburn football, which means we're even closer. We are less than 100 days from college football beginning in the 2024 season.
I mean, I can kind of feel it.
Just a little bit?
Just a touch. I like to say that it really gets going for me after the 4th of July. July 5th, I'm rip-roaring and ready to go college football. So, but, hey, this is Auburn, Alabama. I can talk football 24/7, 365, because it really is the straw that stirs the drink here locally with all sports, although basketball's made a heck of a run at it in the last couple of years. And it's hard to believe that, I mean, the month of May started just like it was yesterday. Now it's the 20th. It'll be finished here shortly. July 4th will be here before we know it, and football season will be here before we know it as well. There's been several preseason rankings that has come out and always comes out. I mean, you'll have the very early post-spring and then the very, very, very early post-spring or post-championship top 25s. But it is getting a little bit more real. I think that obviously recruiting will continue to go through the summer with the early signing period in December. It's kind of flipped the schedule where these months are beginning to be just about as important as any months of getting prospects on campus. Auburn making a really, really, really big push at the number one quarterback in the country out of Carrollton, Georgia at the moment. And all signs kind of point towards a lot of positive momentum for the Tigers. So there's a lot happening football-wise and will continue to happen football-wise leading up into the 4th of July. But on ESPN.com, our good friend Mark Schlabaugh, y'all remember him, don't you, Auburn fans? Mm. From outside the stadium during the Cam Newton reporting time. Never mind. He's got his rankings out, and shocker, he's got Georgia ranked number one. This is over at ESPN.com. In his top 10, I count 5 SEC schools, including Texas now, who's in the SEC, that has ranked third. A little bit of a shocker, though, to me is he has Ole Miss ranked 6th. And Alabama ranked 7th.
Yeah. Do you disagree that those teams should be in the top 10? And here are those SEC teams. You have Georgia at 1, Texas at 3, you have Ole Miss at 6, Alabama 7. How about Missouri at 8?
Getting a lot of love there this season.
That's got to be coming off of last year.
Oh, yes, gosh, they played some good football last year, dude. And they were a dangerous team, and they've got a cupcake schedule if you look at it. Now, I have not done my complete dive and will not until heading into the 4th of July on and, you know, schedules matter big time in college football, not just who you play, but when you play them and where you play them. And just off the top of my head from what I've seen, Missouri's got a way more manageable schedule than just about anyone in the SEC. Plus, they got a pile of returning starters coming back, including their quarterback, who makes a big difference. Luther Burden III is one of the most explosive players in college football. Absolute playmaker that, you know, during recruiting stuck with his commitment to Missouri instead of going to the Ohio State University. So, yeah, I think I agree with them being in that top 10.
People gave me a lot of hate for trying to say Brady Cook was going to be average last year because we did some quarterback rankings on the show a year ago. We'll do that at some point this summer too. Mm-hmm. And I had Brady Cook, I can't quite remember. I want to say like around 10, give or take. And people are like, oh, Brady Cook's terrible, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, he's not bad. He ended up being good. And Missouri was 11-2 last year. And now they're saying he's going to be one of the best in the SEC.
He got a lot better as the year went on.
No doubt about it.
And the very first game where their massive kicker kicked like that 60 or 63-yarder, I can't remember what it was, right there at the end of regulation to beat Kansas State, set the tone for them all
right before
year.
You and Jack went on the air
Yeah,
for,
we were sitting
game
there
day,
just
right?
going crazy, and it was our very first one of the game day on Wings 94.3. So 4 hours before Tiger kickoff, 3 hours, 1 hour before AU Network takes over.
Which will be happening again this year, just in case you're interested.
That's right. So that's a lot of fun. Yeah, it was wild, and it just kind of set the tone for the whole show and the whole season. The one I'm a little hesitant about is Ole Miss at 6. I need to take a little bit better look at their schedule as well. You know, Lane Kiffin gets more love than just about anybody in college football, and I've never really – quite understood it. I know he's a solid coach. I know he's done some great things over there, but ranked 6th heading into the preseason when Mark Schlabaugh's poll, it looks a little high to me.
6th in college football, not just 6th in the SEC. 6th in college football
yeah.
in the power rankings for Mark Schlabaugh right now, post spring. And look, with Jackson Dart, you're going to be fine. You're going to be good. That offense is going to be rumbling and bumbling like they always do. Can the defense hold? That was the big question a year ago. And they went out and got some really big-time players. They brought in players from the SEC. They brought in two SEC defensive players, one from Florida and one from Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. Like, they've brought in some serious talent. And Ole Miss now has a favorable schedule because of all the shakeup in the SEC.
They do have a nice-looking schedule.
Auburn's been on the benefit. Auburn is on the benefiting side of this just as much as Ole Miss is. And so a team that has made double-digit win seasons almost a norm over there, they've got a chance to do it again. And with the expanded college football playoff, Ole Miss is a team to watch.
Heading into at LSU, you know that's going to be a night game. The Magic will be back on October 12th. Ole Miss should be 6-0 heading into that game with their toughest game, hosting Kentucky at home. They'll have one other SEC game before that LSU matchup, and that's at South Carolina. I don't know what the Gamecocks are going to look like this season, but the first half of that season for Ole Miss is very favorable, and then you've got Oklahoma, Arkansas, Georgia, Florida, and Mississippi State. So there's three games that I think are a toss-up for them, where a couple of them they'll be dogs. At LSU, I think they'll be a dog, and then hosting Georgia, they'll be a dog. But other than that, you know, they should be able to handle business with that schedule.
Well, here's been the problem with Ole Miss and their schedules over the years is, and especially in the Lane Kiffin years, is they just run through the first half of their schedule. Right. They're 6-0, 7-0, and everybody's like, oh, here comes Ole Miss, here come the Rebels. And then they play, yeah, the likes of LSU or Alabama or whoever. And it's like, okay, they've been brought back down to earth. But guess what? They don't play Alabama this year. They don't have to play those teams. Yes, they do play at LSU, and that's going to be our litmus test once again for this Lane Kiffin squad. If they can go and win the big games, because they do play LSU, Georgia, and do they play Oklahoma? Is that the newcomer that they get?
Yeah, they'll catch Oklahoma, I believe, the week after they play LSU.
Is that in Oxford?
Yes, sir.
That's a big game. That's a big game, a chance for them to bounce back if they don't beat LSU on the road, or if they do beat LSU on the road. That those two games right there are going to tell me everything I need to know about Ole Miss. If you win those games, watch out.
You know, it's not that Lane Kiffin isn't going to play a physical brand of football. He was offensive coordinator at Alabama when Derrick Henry was there, okay? But for quite some time, that's just kind of been the knock against Ole Miss. You know, finesse, high flying, high scoring. But you get into a ground and pound game with them, and you could take care of business if you had the superior athletes. They've done a heck of a job upgrading their defense through the transfer portal. But Alabama fans hate him, but Pete Golding is a heck of a recruiter also. Mm-hmm. And he's going to do his dangest, to say it lightly,
to keep it clean,
to have some serious talent, especially in that front seven. And to me, that's where Ole Miss has lacked over the years. It's just, you know, they've had solid DBs. Their wide receivers have been out of this world. Their quarterbacks have been very serviceable at worst. You know, I do think that Lane Kiffin occasionally takes too many chances with his quarterbacks running them, and they get killed. Several of them have been injury-prone over the past few years. But it's been that front seven. Teams like Alabama have just mauled. Teams like Georgia. Georgia mauled them last year up front. And so they're doing the best they can do to get an upgrade there. If you compare them to Missouri's schedule, who also they'll definitely be 4-0, heading to Texas A&M, where I think Missouri takes care of business there. You know, it's not till the second half of the season does it really. Missouri does catch at Alabama. They also catch Oklahoma. But that's it, I mean, in Texas A&M. So would you rather have LSU, Georgia, and Oklahoma like Ole Miss does, or would you rather have Texas A&M, Alabama, and Oklahoma like Missouri does? You know, so they're pretty comparable. Schedule-wise, Auburn will play Missouri on 10-19.
Which is something I was just about to bring up. If the Tigers can go on the road and take down Texas A&M, the Missouri Tigers, that is, they'll be 6-0 when Auburn rolls in. 6-0.
Yeah, they're going to be 6-0.
At minimum 5-1, which is probably what Auburn will be. That's what Auburn should be, is 5-1 going into that Missouri game. Because I will say it again, you should be 4-0. You need to beat Oklahoma, and play a competitive game against Georgia. I'm not asking you to beat Georgia on the road this season. I'm not going to do it. I'd love for you to, but I'm not going to ask that. Auburn should be 5-1 when they go on the road to Missouri on October 19th. That's not an outlandish thing to demand. It's not a crazy thing to ask for. 5-1 should be the standard for Auburn this season to go on the road to Missouri.
Yeah, I'm still not willing to go there yet with this Oklahoma deal. I've got to see what time we're going to play and what we look like a little bit more heading into fall camp out of summer. Going through the rest of this top 25, there's something that jumps out to me pretty quickly, Jacob. I want to get your thoughts about it. Number 11, Florida State. And Mike Norvell's done a heck of a job with that program. That they were in shambles. That roster was in shambles, much like Auburn was in shambles. I believe he's in his fourth or fifth year. You got to give these guys some time in today's world to rebuild a roster that's depleted, just like Hugh Freeze has inherited at Auburn. But here's a big difference that I see in what he's got heading into this season at FSU and what Auburn has. He went out and got him a transfer quarterback. And they went ahead, and I forgot this, that they had taken Oregon State quarterback DJ Uiagalelei, who started off at Clemson, was a disappointment there, but went out to Oregon State and was lights out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just leads me to believe, what if that kid was on Auburn's roster this season?
DJU?
Yeah, would Auburn have cracked the top 25 here?
Well, it's a simple question. Has DJU done more, and is he a better college quarterback than Peyton Thorne?
Man, you know, it's been so long since Thorne was at Michigan State, and that season, that great season he had, wasn't his last season at Michigan State. So that was
2021.
I mean, you know, I don't want to be a reactive guy, but after last season, what I saw out of DJU, I'd say right now he has the upper hand.
I'm going to pull up his numbers at Oregon State because I don't know them off the top of my head. But the guy's been around a couple of times, and he started in the ACC, and now he's back in the ACC, the former Clemson quarterback that, again, has made his rounds. But, yeah, Florida State, after getting hosed out of the college football playoff a year ago, Mike Norvell decided, look, I got to go get a quarterback. I don't have one. And went and got a proven guy who's played good football, and they went and got one. They went and paid for a quarterback in the portal because I'm sure DJU didn't come for free.
Do you think he was the guy that Hugh Freeze, Coach Freeze, was talking about that he wasn't willing to pay $1 million for?
I don't think so.
You don't think he was the guy that got the one large? You look at the second half of the top 25, according to Slayball, LSU comes in at 14. You know, and I'm big on LSU, and I'm a believer in their coach, but, man, they have lost a lot, and he points it out. Jaden Daniels gone. Malik Nabers gone. Brian Thomas Jr. gone. That is a pile of talent to lose right there. Tennessee comes in at 15. And then last but not least in the SEC, Oklahoma at 18. So there's your SEC teams in the top 25. I count 8 in the top 25. What do you think about Oklahoma right there at 18?
At 18, I think it's a competitive spot to be. It gives you a chance to come in, be a recognized team your first year in the SEC. And as you pull up Oklahoma's schedule, it's not easy out of the gate. I mean, they play a tough schedule. We've had this conversation. Oklahoma got hosed. Like,
good. They'll be all right. Welcome to the big league, Sanders.
Yeah, their first year.
Be careful what you wish for, Oklahoma.
I'm telling you what.
You may just get it.
I'm telling you. They got it. There's no doubt about it.
And Slayball points out real quick before you go on about their schedule, they lose all 5 starters on their offensive line.
Ooh,
and starting in the SEC.
Man.
I might be beginning to tilt your way on this possible winner chicken dinner.
Here we go. Yeah, talk about Auburn beating them in week 5. Okay, Oklahoma plays Temple. Hosting Houston.
That's a good Houston team.
That's a Big 12 Houston team, remember. And Tulane, because people haven't figured out why to not put them on the schedule. And then week 4, they open up hosting the Volunteers of Tennessee before they make their first road trip in the SEC, and they come to the Plains to take on Auburn. And then,
hey, real quick on that, Auburn AD, John Cohen, I love you. You're great. Thank you for being here. You better be on that horn right now. I'm talking about right now, after all the 1,000 things you have to do to make sure that we're playing that a night game.
Gotta be. has to
be. Or at
be
least a
night
late
game.
Afternoon game.
Give me the 6 o'clock ESPN game. Don't even have to be the ABC game. Or, give me the 6 o'clock ESPN game.
SEC game of the week at night, ESPN on the deuce. I don't care. Just make it a night game, man.
If that's an 11 a.m. kick,
I'm going to have the devil in me.
334-321-1390. We'll keep talking about college football preseason top 25s from ESPN.com. Go into that quarterback conversation a little bit more as well. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join us at 3:30. That's all coming up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Talking quarterbacks here on the Monday edition of On the Line, and we got into this talking from the power rankings, the preseason, post-spring top 25 for Mark Schlabaugh on ESPN, and it started bringing up quarterback conversations, as it typically does in this time of year, with the different SEC starting quarterbacks and where Auburn's sort of ranks right now.
But can I say something before we get – we got to put a bow on this Oklahoma schedule that we brought up real quick. It is absolutely brutal.
It's miserable.
After they come to Auburn, they'll host Texas in the Red River rivalry.
Well, that'll be a neutral site.
Neutral site in mm-hmm. Dallas, Texas in the Cotton Bowl, I believe. Listen, and then they get South Carolina, whatever. They're going to be terrible. But their last 5 games, they get Maine in one of those 5. Listen to the other 4. At Ole Miss, at Missouri, Alabama at home, at LSU.
Whoo, man.
Goodness gracious, that is about as tough as it gets.
I don't know whose Cheerios that they took a leak in before they came to the SEC, but goodness gracious. I mean, just not really knowing what Oklahoma's going to be this year, let's say they start 4-0, right? That's beating Temple, Houston, Tulane, and hosting Tennessee and getting their first SEC game and their first SEC win. Again, I'm telling you, they're losing when they come to Auburn.
Gosh, compared to Texas, they got a break.
Wow. Oh, Texas is ridiculously easy compared to Oklahoma. But Oklahoma's going to lose to Auburn. They're going to lose to Texas. They're going to lose to Ole Miss. They're going to lose to Missouri. They're going to lose to LSU. And they possibly could lose to Alabama. You're looking at 5 or 6 losses for Oklahoma their first year in the SEC.
Breaking
Ouch.
In 5 new offensive linemen. And who knows who their quarterback's going to be because their starting quarterback went to Oregon.
Not a great spot to be in.
Wow. Mm. Speaking of quarterbacks, Jacob, you've had some thoughts on some quarterback importancy, to say the least, in the SEC this season.
Yeah. And, I mean, you start looking around what the SEC has, and there's still some battles to be won, and there's still some starters to be officially named. But you start looking around – and something that Auburn fans have continued to be upset about is the fact that Auburn didn't bring in a quarterback through the portal because they have put all their chips into Peyton Thorne. And if it works out, great. But if it doesn't, then this team's in big trouble. But you had asked about DJU, who transferred from Clemson, who then went to Oregon State, and is now back in the ACC playing at Florida State. And his numbers a year ago, just take these numbers and tell me what you think, Auburn fans. He was a 57 completion percentage quarterback a year ago at Oregon State. 2,600 yards, 21 touchdowns, 7 interceptions for a 145 quarterback rating. He also rushed for 200 yards and 6 touchdowns. So overall, 27 touchdowns and 7 interceptions on a 57 completion percentage and threw for more yards than he's done in his entire career at 2,600 yards. Would you take that right now? Would you take that right now over anything else on the roster? A guy that's played Power 5 college football, a 2-year starter at Clemson, a starter at Oregon State, and more than likely a starter at Florida State. Would you take that right now?
Would you take that over 61%, 1,755 yards, 16 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, and definitely a lot of yards rushing, which helped out his stats last season. Would you take him over Peyton Thorne? I would.
Stats would say so. The stats would say to do it. Now, you can make the argument that DJU played at Oregon State, and he was playing in the Pac-12.
Playing a much Much easier conference. Probably had a little bit better situation, though, roster-wise. Also, probably had receivers that were more capable than Auburn's receivers last year, which is sad to say that Oregon State's got better receivers than Auburn.
And he's going to have that at Florida State, too, which I'm really curious to see what happens.
They lost a lot, though, off that off their roster as well.
Off that playoff team.
Yeah, Keon, Keon Coleman's gone. He went to the NFL, and Jani Wilson as well. So, you know, they've got to reload a little bit down there as well.
And look around the quarterbacks that we know are going to be the starters in the SEC. I mean, okay. Jalen Milroe at Alabama, great. I mean, he's a fantastic player. You've got Brady Cook at Missouri, who took his team to 11 wins last year. You have all these guys. Look at Georgia. They know who they're – I mean, there's so many teams that know what they have, and there's a lot of teams that don't.
Back in early January, Brad Crawford, 24/7 Sports, did a early look at projected starters in the SEC and ranked them. Now, that's a very early look. Guess where he had Peyton Thorne ranked?
I'm going to guess like 9 or 10.
13th.
Oh, golly.
He had him ranked 13th. Of course, he had the quarterback from Alabama ranked first. Quinn Ewers second. Jackson Dart third. No, he did not have Milroe ranked first. I'm sorry, he had Carson Beck ranked first. Milroe ranked fourth. I don't know. That looks a little low to me, but that's just how loaded SEC quarterbacks are right now. You could put any of those in a bag and jumble them up and pick one out.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, 13th, your man Brady Cook. Would you take Garrett Nussmeier right now over Peyton Thorne?
Ooh, from LSU.
Yeah, ranked seventh according to these rankings. That looks a little high to me. I think he's still got a lot to prove.
I think I'd stick with Peyton Thorne.
I think I'd rather have Graham Mertz than Doug Nussmeier.
I think so.
Than Garrett Nussmeier.
Sure, sure. There's a lot of parity.
Would you take Connor Wegman from Texas A&M over Peyton Thorne right
the
now?
The ceiling that he showed? Absolutely. Now, whether he stays healthy and whether that all works out, we'll find out. But I don't know. That's a conversation we can continue at a different time. We got to get to our bottom of the hour break. Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network joins us after this. We'll talk about baseball and softball wrapping up the season. Auburn basketball picking up a transfer portal commit and everything else going on around Auburn athletics. Jacob Hillman joins us next.
With Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goertz, and we continue on here on the Monday edition of On the Line. And before we get back to our football conversation, Uncle T-Bone, do want to shout out the couple of spring sports for Auburn football. Baseball and softball, who have officially wrapped up their season. Baseball, we talked about it early on in the show today. They ended the season, believe it or not. Auburn baseball ended the season on a two-series winning streak in the SEC. After not winning a single one, they turned it around and beat Missouri on the road, and they came home and gave the fans what they wanted. They take down the Crimson Tide 2 games out of 3. Saturday was just a disaster. Went into the wee hours of the night. That game, just, we don't have to talk about it. But Auburn does get the series win over Alabama. And
Gage Miller for Alabama.
Oh my gosh.
Off in that game.
Yeah, he had a career gracious day against that Auburn pitching staff Saturday. But overall, in a season that was not good, a season that was very disappointing, a season that was just flat out not fun, Auburn does build some sort of momentum going into the offseason with two straight SEC series wins.
Yeah, I mean, proud for Auburn. You know, look, you can have a tough and rough season and a terrible record and it not be what you want to be and still have that championship mentality, like, you know, we're not gonna stop fighting till the end. We're going to keep grinding. There's a lot of bad luck in this season. I do understand that Butch Thompson has already made a request for Auburn NIL to try and up its baseball. They got to go out there and get some arms. You know, I think that they're close offensively. I do think they need a little bit more pop in that lineup. you know, Cade Bellew from Auburn. I mean, he's there's several, the Mason Maynard from Vestavia. I mean, they got a lot. Ike Irish is going to do what Ike Irish does. Wasn't healthy all season. Offensively, they're close, like I said. They're going to have to get some more serviceable pitching, especially out of bullpen. I mean, Saturday night was a debacle.
Yeah, it was bad.
And I can't remember the kid they brought in. I don't want to run anybody down when Alabama had fought back, got up just a little bit, and got the bases loaded, and Gage Miller came to bat. And I just knew that guy running in was about to just get rocked. You could just feel it. And you know, Miller's about as hot as anybody in the SEC right now, too. I mean, he's batting .383 for the season. Get you some of that. But,
yeah.
You know, it's a tough situation to come into with the bases loaded. But you just can't serve up that first pitch right across the plate and let him just rock it into the power alley into left center.
Yeah, well, good news is Auburn did get the series win, even though Saturday didn't go the way they wanted it to. And we'll bring in a guy that could tell us more about it. Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network is with us on the phone lines. How are you, Hillman? Happy Monday, brother.
I'm doing well, Jacob. Sorry for calling in just a couple minutes late, but I'm happy to join you guys on the line and talk about a series win over Alabama.
Well, that's exactly where we are. So tell us what you saw, your breakdown of Auburn ending the regular season, ending the entire season on a two-series win streak, I think is the way to say that.
Right, yeah. Yeah, no. It's always a big deal to end your season on a positive. Unfortunately, it's not the postseason for Auburn, but nonetheless, it still always matters when you beat Alabama, especially at home, at Plainsman Park, or in any sport, whether that's at Jordan-Hare Stadium or Neville Arena. It matters a lot. And the way this team did it and really, really stepped up when it mattered, I guess, you know, we talked about it being too little too late a few weeks ago. When things started to look more positive, when you got the Game 3 win against LSU and Game 3 win against Ole Miss, And while that's true, I do still think that it's just ultra important for a lot of these guys that will be returning next year. I heard Tebow mentioning Cade Bellew and Ike Irish, two guys that made all SEC honors this year. When they return next year, that's going to be big for their confidence, and they're going to go into some of these summer leagues. And I think that's just such a big deal for them to end on a lighter note than what we possibly thought about a month ago. So just really happy for this team, this coaching staff, and really this fan base as well. The Auburn family showed up all season long, third straight year that a season attendance record was broken, and that's going to be shattered again next year because of the expansion to Plainsman Park and the new facility. So excited to see what it looks like come the, I guess, third week of February in 2025.
Yeah, those additions to Plainsman Park, man, those are going to be just, and they've already happened, and some are still in progress. I mean, there's a lot of good things happening at Plainsman Park. Remind our listeners, for those that may have forgot or don't know what's happening over there, kind of that it's a 6-year plan where they kind of broke it up into three different steps.
Yeah, so obviously the first thing that happened, it's been done for a while, but it's that Josh Donaldson hitting facility over in Wright Field. So that was the start of it a few years ago. But it's all turned into this fan experience addition. So first was a Hall of Fame club. That was completed this past offseason, and you saw how it went from the biggest backstop in the SEC to the smallest, and it actually had an impact on that Friday night game when Alabama was trying to mount that comeback, and that ball bounced to the backstop and bounced back. But that's been used at such a high rate. Everyone's loving it. It is a great and incredible premium area. And then currently in construction, if you try to drive down Donahue Drive, I wouldn't recommend it because it is a little, the construction zone is a little tricky to maneuver, but the first base club is now being built. It's going to look beautiful, and it's going to add plenty of seats, and it's really a great premium area for fans to enjoy. And just these new spots popping up, it's going to give every fan an opportunity. Also, the new press box, that will be renovated and made kind of similar to the Broadway Club at Jordan-Hare Stadium, where it's going to be right behind home plate, air-conditioned, and plenty of food and drinks. And then there's also the War Eagle Wall. That's going to be very cool for really anyone. It's going to be kind of an extension to the Tiger Terrace, so seats on the Green Monster, you can't beat that. And then something else that was done this year, the back 40 deck in right center field, that's going to be extended to the batter's eye in center field. So there's going to be so much done this offseason. It's going to be so exciting when we get to February of 2025 to see what Plainsman Park looks like then.
And it's something that needed to be done. Plainsman Park was still a beautiful ballpark, and when it was initially built and put there and renovated, I mean, it was the nicest one in the SEC, but everybody around this conference has started dumping just millions of dollars into baseball and the facilities and the stadium upgrades. So this is something that's going to really be a facelift for Plainsman Park and put it right back up there with the best around the conference. Don't you agree?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And like you said, in this conference, I mean, you've got really the ultimate, the premier spot in Starkville with Duty Noble Field. And obviously, there's a lot of influence on Plainsman Park from there with Athletic Director John Cohen, as well as External Affairs AD Rhett Hobart. So they both have a little bit of feedback there. But it's not just like Duty Noble Field, but they know what it takes to build a beautiful and great ballpark for the fans, and that's what their focus is creating the best atmosphere for the Auburn family.
Jacob Hillman with Auburn Sports Network. Mickey Dean's tenure as Auburn softball head coach comes to an end in Tallahassee. Tigers fought hard all weekend, fought hard all season. Jacob, go ahead and put a bow on the Auburn softball season for us. What happened? Against FSU in the Tallahassee Regional for it to end, and what do you think the Tigers look like moving forward?
Yeah, I think you actually did a nice job of it right there, talking about the fight in this team. And Coach Dean, emotional in his post-game radio report with J.J. Jackson and Britt Bowen following the game. That's what he talked about, was the fight in this team. They'd never stopped. And I don't know if y'all stay up for it on Saturday night, but I stayed up with the Tigers and watched them beat UCF all the way at 2 a.m. Central Sunday morning. And it really was just, like you said, the fight was unbelievable. Maddie Penta put together, quite frankly, probably the most legendary performance she could have put up with those 21 strikeouts in 12 innings, 250 pitches, not to mention she comes back in on Sunday in just a critical situation, bases loaded, nobody out. She gets two strikeouts, comes a strike away from striking out the side with the bases loaded.
One looked like a strike, too.
I would argue that as well. And things unraveled from there. But I think the team just ran out of gas. And that's going to happen when you play till 3 a.m. local time the previous morning. So that's part of it. But, yes, this team fought very hard. And again, what Coach Dean did for this program, taking over in the most difficult situation possible in college athletics, and then leading Auburn to an NCAA regional every single year that the tournament was held. Obviously, the 2020 season was never completed due to COVID, but that's a huge accomplishment, and it really kept this program afloat. And they're going to be looking for a new head coach, and we'll follow Auburn softball, follow AuburnTigers.com in the coming weeks, and that news should be released at some point.
To go back to that Florida State team and that game yesterday, that's one of the best offenses in all of college softball, and you have to avoid one of those big-time crooked innings, and that's what really did it yesterday, right, was when Auburn just kind of – they just fell short, like you said. They ran out of gas. They just didn't really have a whole lot left to give, and it was that one big inning that kind of pulled everything away, and that's what allowed Florida State to get it done.
You're exactly right. I thought that – Maddie came in and she did exactly what she needed to do, and just one call didn't go your way, and Florida State took advantage. So that's part of it. That's part of the game, and just really proud of the softball team and what they did. Those series wins at LSU, the one against Alabama, and really just again, I can't say that enough. I'll say it again, just the fight, because these four straight weekends where you play a game that goes to the 11th inning or later. That is unbelievable.
It's insane, so, yeah.
I am proud of this team, and I was happy to be on the call for a lot of the season in the non-conference play. So proud of them and ready for 2025 and beyond.
He's a part of the radio crew over at the Auburn Sports Network. Jacob Hillman with us on ESPN 106.7. Auburn basketball and Bruce Pearl pick up a commitment through the transfer portal. A portal pickup they've been looking to make and still not done. Jaheim Hudson from SMU commits last Friday, just before the weekend. Tell us what you think about him, the forward who's going to be joining the roster, and the fact that Bruce Pearl said today, still looking for another backup point guard.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how this the depth chart I would specify kind of comes together, because I think Howard Frog Turtle, that's his nickname, by the way.
Yeah.
How he adds to this depth, because he's going to compete for starting spot with Chaney Johnson, but also the way Chaney Johnson came along those last 9 games of the season, I think showed this coaching staff that he has the capability to start and can really improve. And then, as you mentioned, looking for another combo guard. That's going to be very important for the depth. But I think you've got a lot of options in that backcourt as well. Obviously, Denver Jones, he played a little bit of point guard last year, but then you also bring in J.P. Pegues, who's going to be kind of the guy there. And then Todd Pettiford, the freshman, he can play the 1 and 2 as well. So it's going to be interesting to see where Auburn targets in the portal going forward.
Jacob Hillman, he joins me every Monday here on ESPN 106.7. What are you going to do now? You're going to be playing a lot more golf, I know, right, now that the broadcast season is coming to a close?
You're exactly right. Right now I'm paying attention to Auburn Women's Golf, who's in 7th place of the NCAA Championship, 13 over, 2 strokes ahead of the cut line out in Carlsbad, California. So hoping they can make it to the match play portion of the championship. Number 1, men's golf. They'll be at the Omni La Costa North Course this upcoming weekend as well, looking to take home a national championship. They've won 6 straight tournaments, so those men's and women's golf programs, they are really standing out, trying to bring home some hardware for the Tigers. And yes, I will also be playing golf, just not as well as these ladies and men.
Yeah, I was going to say, did they give you a phone call? I heard nobody hits a 6-iron like Jacob Hillman does in Birmingham.
Yeah, I don't know about that. So, I'm excited for the summer to get out there and get ready for this upcoming football season as well.
103 days until Auburn football kicks off, Hillman, in case you didn't know.
It's going to fly by. I know it.
It will. And, man, we appreciate you and your time as always. Tell everybody where they can keep up with anything they need to know. Again, I know the broadcast season has began. It's winded down and pretty much over now. And, man, the relationship that we've had with you guys this past year has been nothing short of awesome. And we look forward to many more years. But tell people where they can find all the information they need.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Jacob Hillman AU, as well as the Auburn Sports Network at AU Sports Network. But, yeah, it's been a pleasure working with the Auburn Network over this past year. And as you said, we're excited for what's to come. But, yeah, this summer still, Andy Burcham is going to have the Talking Tigers podcast posted. So plenty of special guests coming up. This upcoming week, it will be the 5-year anniversary of the passing of former voice of the Tigers, Rod Bramblett, and a tribute that Brad Law put together. It's a beautiful tribute Andy will post to the AU Sports Network account. And it's a great look back at the life of Rod and just everything he did for Auburn University. So be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, 5 years already. That's unbelievable.
That's hard to believe.
That's unbelievable.
It really is.
Well, man, we appreciate you sharing that. We appreciate you hopping on as always. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Have a great week, guys. War Eagle.
That's Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network joining us as he does each and every Monday here on ESPN Radio. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap up the Monday edition of On the Line after this.
Are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network joining us as he does every single Monday to talk about all things Auburn athletics with some basketball portal news today. Baseball, softball season's coming to an end. You do have women's golf competing right now. Men's golf getting going this weekend. And, yeah, just like that, Uncle T-Bone, it's about to be complete offseason for Auburn Athletics. I mean, the spring sports are coming to an end, and then you're going to have about 2.5 months before things get cranked up again.
Yeah, I think there'll be plenty of football recruiting news, though, during that time. Like I said earlier, with the calendar basically being flipped, you know, it's prime time season to have people like Alvin Henderson on campus like he did this past weekend. Mm-hmm. The running back from down in Elma that's committed to Penn State right now, Auburn has a massive interest in, and many others. So there will be plenty to talk about, you know, real quick as we wind up. I just hope that everyone realizes the gravity of the Brian Battee situation.
Yes.
And our thoughts and prayers are with him, his family, the Auburn family, and everyone out there who knows this kid. You know, no news broke during our show about his situation, but I think it is one of those, Jacob, where it just feels like to me this kid's fighting for his life and he needs all our prayers and support.
And really the only thing that we have heard from Auburn or anybody in the program was Hugh Freeze tweeting out today on its X account that said, Auburn family, prayers are still needed. A setback occurred last night, and Brian Battee is still in the ICU on a ventilator. And that's, if you're not a medical person, that's not a good sign. That's just the fact of the matter. And we will keep you updated on our show, on this radio station, and anywhere you need to look. I mean, we hope for the best, of course, and it's just a horrific situation to be caught up in, and not only is he fighting for his life, his brother is dead. I mean, his brother was shot and killed in this entire situation, and so, yeah, thoughts and prayers with the Battee family. Just saddening, man. It's horrible thing that happened over the weekend in Sarasota, Florida. So as we do wrap up today's show, if you missed any of it, you can go and you can find the podcast later on today, ESPNAU.com. We talked about some Auburn basketball with the transfer portal additions and the hopes of what Auburn basketball is looking to do. Still looking for the backup point guard, Sid Bruce Pearl, today at his golf tournament just up the road up to 80. Also talked about a top 25 power rankings on ESPN for college football. Auburn was not in it, but how many SEC teams did we say? Eight are in the top 25?
Yeah, I believe there were eight in Schlabel's early top 25, five in the top 10 alone. I believe that was two in the top five. I have to go back and double check. Georgia ranked number one preseason, according to his poll, and Texas number three. Really quickly off the top of my head, I'd have Georgia, Texas, Alabama, and you could basically just throw all of those right now in a bag and pick one out and be in your top five. Remember, folks, though, being fifth is okay now in college football because of the 12-game playoff. Eight teams in the top 25, according to him, and I mean, doesn't it just show how more difficult it's going to get season in, season out with expansion?
It's going to be harder than it's ever been to win games.
Yeah, to win games. But the good news is I could see a situation where Auburn or somebody could lose three games in a season and still make the college football playoffs.
So absolutely.
With conference expansions coming, playoff expansion, and it has to.
I think you get enough. You've been allowed another loss is what has happened here.
You get a mulligan.
You do. You get a mulligan, which I used.
You get an extra mulligan.
Yeah, I used quite a bit of those this weekend on a golf in a golf tournament. I paid for them, though. Don't you worry. I paid for them. I'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.